This episode is brought to you by State Farm. Knowing you could be saving money for the things you really want, like that dream house or ride, is a great feeling. That's why the State Farm Personal Price Plan can help you save when you choose to bundle home and auto. Bundling, just another way to save with a personal price plan. Prices are based on rating plans that vary by state. Coverage options are selected by the customer. Availability, amount of discounts and savings, and eligibility vary by state.
It's 12:37 a.m. on April the 15th, 1912. The small Cunard liner Carpathia is en route from New York to Gibraltar. In the wireless room, 21-year-old Marconi operator Harold Cottam is exhausted. He's been on duty since 7 o'clock in the morning. Cottam has just returned from the bridge, where he gave his final report of the day to the ship's officers. Now he's slipping off his work jacket and unlacing his boots, preparing for bed. But he keeps his headphones on, just in case. Like most liners at the time, Carpathia has only one operator. The ship's wireless communication is not an around-the-clock service. So when Cottam is off duty or out of the room, any incoming messages go unheeded, including, this evening, the distress calls broadcast by Titanic, both the old signal CQD and the brand new SOS. Before he turns in, the young man decides to do one last good deed for the day. He's overheard the shore station at Cape Cod struggling to get private messages through to Titanic. Knowing that Carpathia is much closer to the White Star vessel, he decides to lend a hand. But when Cottam makes contact with Titanic to let them know they have messages waiting, he gets a lot more than he bargained for. "Come at once," sends Titanic's senior operator Jack Phillips. "We've struck a berg." In case Cottam should doubt the severity of the situation, Phillips adds, "It's a CQD, old man," before giving Titanic's last known coordinates. Cottam is stunned. "Shall I report this to the captain?" he sends back feebly. The answer comes back right away. "Yes, come quick." Cottam races to the bridge, where he finds First Officer Horace Dean on watch. Together, the two men go to wake Captain Arthur Rostron. "What the hell?" exclaims Rostron, demanding to know why Cottam and Dean have barged into his cabin. The young Marconi operator describes the message he just received from Titanic. "You're absolutely sure?" Rostron asks, any trace of irritation gone now. "Certain," replies Cottam. Captain Rostron leaps out of bed and throws on a dressing gown. The three men make for the bridge. Within moments, the captain is issuing orders. "Call all hands on deck," he commands. "Get ready to swing out the boats." Rostron sets a course for Titanic's position, full speed ahead. He tells Cottam to let Phillips know help is coming. But the distance between the two ships is more than 50 miles. For a steamer like Carpathia, with a top speed of only 14 knots, that's about 4 hours sailing time. The question is, will Titanic still be afloat when they reach her? From the Noiser Podcast Network, this is Titanic Ship of Dreams, Part 6. An hour after hitting the iceberg, Titanic has come to a dead stop. The sea all around is as calm as a mill pond, the stars so bright that you can read your watch by them. Passengers have begun to come up on deck in their life jackets. But although the ship has already developed a slight list, very few people on board know that she's sinking, let alone that her designer, Thomas Andrews, has predicted she'll go down within a couple of hours. In the wireless room on the boat deck, Marconi operators Jack Phillips and Harold Bride are hard at work. They're still trying to reach other potential rescue ships, and they're not having much luck. Tim Maltin.
One of the things that came out of the Titanic disaster inquiry was that there should be 24-hour radio watch. In reality, what that meant was that there should be two radio operators on all ships. Now, Titanic was a vast ship, and she did have two radio operators in Phillips and Bride. But all the other ships in the area that were smaller, that were responding to these distress signals, they only had one operator. So I think it was hit and miss at that time of night. Had the collision occurred in the daytime, everyone would have been awake and it would have been no problem. In fact, the first distress signal was not sent out until after midnight. That was when ships without dual radio operators had no one on radio watch that night.
In fact, Titanic's wireless men have just made contact with another liner, the Frankfurt. Unfortunately, she's even further away than the Carpathia.
Phillips and Bride are tapping away for about an hour and a half after the collision, trying desperately to hope that someone else is going to wake up who's nearer to them and get the message. Unfortunately, most of the replies that are coming in from ships that they know don't have the speed to arrive in time.
Professor Jerome Chertkov.
There was no ship that could come and help them in time. If another ship had been within hailing distance, that would have saved a lot of lives.
They get a heartbreaking reply from the Olympic that says, okay, I've got it, I'm 400 miles away, are you steering to meet us?
Titanic's sister ship, Olympic, is captained by White Star veteran Herbert Haddock, the man who put Titanic through her sea trials in Belfast Lough just 2 weeks earlier. At first, it's hard for Haddock to grasp just how serious the damage from the iceberg really is. After all, these are the ships that everyone said were unsinkable.
They just can't believe this. No one can really comprehend that the great Titanic really is sinking. And those that can are too far away to be able to help.
There is a ship much closer to Titanic's position, a cargo liner called the SS Californian. She is less than 20 miles away, stopped dead for the night on the edge of an ice field. The Californian's wireless operator, Cyril Evans, was in communication with Phillips and Bride before he knocked off for the night at 11:30 p.m., just 9 minutes before Titanic hit the iceberg. Now, though, Evans is sound asleep in his bunk. He won't be woken until after dawn. Californian's captain, Stanley Lord, knows there's another ship nearby, but he has no idea it's Titanic. The unusual atmospheric conditions that previously camouflaged the iceberg are now scrambling Titanic's identity as well.
Because the horizon was slightly raised behind Titanic, she appeared to be within the horizon, and that meant to sailors that she looked as though she was 5 miles away, because the horizon's about 10 miles away. So if a ship's hull down over the horizon, it's 10 or 12 miles away. If a ship is hull up within the horizon and looking about halfway between you and the horizon, it's about 5 miles away. And the problem is that because Titanic looked 5 miles away, they judged that she was 400 feet long and about the same size as Californian. In fact, she was the biggest ship in the world, twice as far away.
It's an understandable misjudgment. But in situations like these, an honest mistake can prove deadly.
The crucial thing there was they knew from their charts of the North Atlantic that the only ship near them with radio was the Titanic. And so the race horizon concluded them to be certain that the ship they were looking at was not the Titanic. And therefore, they did not wake up their radio operator. And that's what caused the tragedy. Otherwise, everyone would have been saved. So the atmospheric conditions caused the accident, and they turned that into a catastrophe.
In the inquiries that follow the sinking, witnesses from both vessels will testify to seeing an unknown ship about 5 miles away. In other words, midway between their respective positions.
And of course, the inquiry actually tried to trace this ship, and they wondered, was it the Samson? Was it this? Was it that? They all tried to think of, what is a ship that is 5 miles between these two vessels?
It's not until more than a century after Titanic sank that the discovery of the cold water mirage offers a possible solution.
And of course, what the miraging discovery made me realize is that the mystery ship was a mirage, if you like. It was the Californian appearing nearer to Titanic than she was, and it was Titanic appearing nearer to Californian than she was. So there was, in fact, no mystery ships.
Survivor, Eva Hart.
I saw that ship terribly close. I saw it. You know, it wasn't just lights on the horizon. You could see it was a ship.
A lot of the reason for not having much panic on Titanic was they could see the Californian, and they did believe Californian was coming to her.
If you've shopped online, chances are you've bought from a business powered by Shopify. You know that purple Shop Pay button you see at checkout? The one that makes buying so incredibly easy? That's Shopify. And there's a reason so many businesses sell with it. Because Shopify makes it incredibly easy to start and run your business. Shopify is the commerce platform behind 10% of all e-commerce in the US. Sign up for your $1 per month trial and start selling today at shopify.com/promo. Go to shopify.com/promo.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. Now, I was looking for fun ways to tell you that Mint's offer of unlimited premium wireless for $15 a month is back. So I thought it would be fun if we made $15 bills, but it turns out that's very illegal. So there goes my big idea for the commercial. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 for 3 month plan equivalent to $15 per month required. New customer offer for first 3 months only. Speed slow after 35 gigabytes if network's busy. Taxes and fees extra. See mintmobile.com.
Put us in a box. Go ahead. That just gives us something to break out of. Because the next generation 2025 GMC Terrain Elevation is raising the standard of what comes standard. As far as expectations go, why meet them when you can shatter them? What we choose to challenge, we challenge completely. We are professional grade. Visit GMC.com to learn more.
For Titanic's crew, identifying the ship they can see to the north of them is less important than getting its attention. Since their wireless distress call has gone unanswered, other means of communication must be attempted. But these two fall foul of the freak weather conditions that night.
Partly in desperation, they started Morse lamp signaling to this nearby vessel, which we now know was the Californian. But unfortunately, the messages didn't reach the ships because the ships were in fact further away than each ship thought they were from each other. And then, out of even more desperation, they started firing rockets into the air as distress rockets. Unfortunately, because the ships were actually so far away, the rockets were exploding in the normally refracting air at about 600 feet up. And of course, at that distance, they were tiny because Titanic was actually about 12 miles away. And so that's why they either thought the rockets were coming from a ship further away, which in some senses is true, if that makes sense, but they also may have thought they were some sort of company signals. Unfortunately, it gave Captain Lord the excuse to wait until daylight to go and investigate what was really going on.
At 1:15, Captain Lord is woken by his second officer, Herbert Stone, and informed that rockets have been sighted. Are they company signals? The captain asks. Stone replies that he can't be sure. Well, go on morsing, Captain Lord tells him, before drifting back to sleep. It's a violation of the strict regulations regarding rockets spotted at sea. According to the Board of Trade rulebook, if there's any doubt about their intended meaning, then they must be assumed to be distress signals. In the inquiries to come, the Californian's captain will be heavily criticized for his inaction. With the benefit of hindsight, it's hard not to see Lord as grossly negligent, certainly compared to the heroic Captain Rostron of the Carpathia. Julian Fellows.
The Carpathia had an efficient, disciplined captain with a proper sense of values, and his only limitation was simply the distance he was away. He got there as quickly as he could, but it was too late. The California is the example of how not to run a ship, and actually, ironically, it was the California that gave rise to the greatest change in shipping rules and laws. I mean, the fact that after this accident, you could never turn off a ship's radio again because the California just turned off their radio when everyone wanted to go to bed. I mean, it sounds incredible to us, but that is exactly what happened. And they didn't even turn it on when they woke the captain up to tell him the rockets were still going off, the alarm rockets were still being sent up.
We have the benefit of hindsight, and he did not. And we have to remember that the reason that captains are captains is because all of their experience is brought to bear, and they look at things and they trust their judgment sometimes more than the judgment of their junior officers because they've got more experience. And just as Captain Smith's experience was working against him, so Captain Lord's experience was working against him.
Captain Lord has had his defenders over the years, but I think they're on a poor wicket, to be honest. I think his behavior is disgraceful and inexplicable. All he had to do was very slowly and carefully travel the 5 miles that separated him from the Titanic to find out what was going on. And if nothing had been going on, then he could have stopped there and gone back to bed. But he chose not to do it. He was a shameful figure for the rest of his life. And without sounding too hard, I think he deserved to be. He condemned many men and women and children to their deaths when he could have saved them all. And it really is as simple as that.
What I actually think happened was, I think Captain Lord was well aware of what was going on. Now, don't get me wrong, he had no idea it was the Titanic and that thousands of lives were at stake. But what he probably did believe is that a nearby vessel, probably a fishing vessel, was in some sort of difficulty, not sufficient difficulty to actually do Morse lamp signals to him. And what he thought was, he was looking after the 50 people on his ship. So what he decided was he would investigate the shenanigans and goings on that he could tell from some rockets going off and things like that on this nearby ship that wasn't signaling to him. He decided that he would investigate that in daylight when it was safe to do so. Now, the tragedy for him is that having made that quite rational decision, he then found out at daylight, at dawn, that the biggest ship in the world had sunk with the loss of thousands of lives. And his hair literally went white overnight. And I think in a way he never really deep down forgave himself for that. But we have to look at him as a puny human, like all of us puny humans. And I think he was just making decisions based on the data that was coming in. Unfortunately, that data was extremely unusual and very hard to interpret because of the weather conditions that night.
Captain Lord isn't the only one who fails to grasp Titanic's dire predicament. More than an hour after the collision with the iceberg, many of the ship's own passengers are still oblivious to the danger they're in. Like the proverbial frog, slowly boiled alive, they won't understand what's happening until it's too late to do anything about it.
Well, we all know how when a fire alarm goes off in your office, you don't pay it any attention at all. You just carry on with your telephone call on the assumption that someone will deal with it or it's a test or whatever. And when someone actually comes along and says, listen, guys, I'm afraid that's a real fire alarm, it's absolutely astounding. You know, you don't pay any attention. And at the beginning of the alarm on the Titanic, I'm sure there were plenty of people who said, oh, I don't want to wake the children and I don't want to get up and it's so cold.
Professor Stephanie Barchewski.
There's a crew member who's sleeping and some of his buddies come in and tell him, hey, you know, we've hit an iceberg. There's ice all over the decks. And he just says, yeah, well, that won't do any harm. And, you know, rolls back over and goes back to sleep.
Only 12 hours earlier, White Star Chairman Bruce Ismay was cheerfully boasting to first class passengers, we are in amongst the icebergs. Even now, after the collision, Hitting a berg is seen as a novelty. Fletcher Williams is in his first-class cabin on sea deck, sipping on a whiskey cocktail, when his business partner, Elmer Taylor, knocks on the door. "We've struck an iceberg," Taylor declares gleefully. "I brought you a piece of it for your highball." Ever since Captain Smith gave the order to start loading the lifeboats, Titanic stewards have been knocking on doors, doing their best to persuade the sleeping inhabitants to come up on deck, with limited success.
Titanic had no, if you like, tannoy system. She had no sort of global system where the bridge could make a message. So, in fact, you know, stewards would have been told to get people up, but they didn't want to create a panic. So I think they'd have given the impression that it's a precaution. You know, that we've had some serious damage. As a precaution, people should get in the lifeboats. They had to walk that tightrope between creating a panic on a ship where there were not enough lifeboats for everyone versus actually getting an orderly evacuation and saving as many people as possible.
Not everyone is in the mood to cooperate.
It is very late at night. Many people would have eaten a heavy meal, probably drunk a fair bit. I mean, I think some people are just going to be in such disbelief. They're going to say, oh, you know, and the fact that you're in bed and you're warm and you're cozy and you don't want to get up, if nothing else, it's going to delay you reacting to it, right? Because you're probably going to say, oh, 5 more minutes and then I'll get up. This can't really be that sort of urgent.
Susie Miller.
They'd been sold a ticket on an unsinkable ship, and here they were being told it's sinking.
It's not just that you were woken from sleep. It's that, you know, if I'm sitting in my cabin awake and somebody comes and tells me we've hit an iceberg, you need to get your life belt on and get up to the boat deck, and the bump seemed really minor. Is this guy right or not? I think if you have a public address system with the captain telling you, but here's a steward who comes to your door, knocks on your door and says, get out, get your life belt on and get to the boat there.
This can't possibly be happening, you know, we're not going to sink. This is the Titanic. It's the biggest ship in the world. There's no way it's going to sink. So, yeah, you can understand why it took some time for passengers to realize the gravity of the situation and realize, yeah, we actually do need to get off onto a lifeboat underway.
To begin with, even senior crew members assume that launching Titanic's lifeboats is more a case of following procedure than responding to any real threat. When Second Officer Lightoller suggests getting the women and children aboard the boats, he is far from certain that Titanic will sink. When passengers come up and ask him if he thinks the situation is serious, Lightoller can honestly answer no. As he puts it, getting the boats in the water is just a precaution. Lightoller points out the lights of the Californian, which are easily visible from the boat deck. Whatever happens to Titanic, surely everyone on board will be fine. Like many of the passengers, Lightoller was in bed when the iceberg first scraped along the side of the ship. From his cabin on the port side of the boat deck, the damage didn't feel that severe.
Lightoller said he felt a slight bump and heard a grinding sound. That was it. And he didn't think it was a big deal. And other people didn't think it was a big deal. Some ice has fallen on the deck where passengers went sometimes on promenades, and they were playing with the ice. You know, getting the lifeboats out and down was just kind of show and tell. It was just pro forma. It wasn't really needed, but we probably ought to do it just because that's sort of what you're supposed to do when something happens to the ship.
That morning, Titanic's crew were supposed to have taken part in their first lifeboat drill at sea. But that was cancelled by Captain Smith in favour of an extended church service. Now, a little over 12 hours later, they find themselves lowering the boats for real.
They were cradled in what are called davits, so a cradling and lowering mechanism. It was basically chain-based, so you lowered them down using a chain system.
So there's the crewman on each side holding the rope, right, through a pulley, and then there's the rope is attached to the bow of the lifeboat and the stern of the lifeboat, and the crewmen have to work together to lower it. And that's very hard to do. And again, remember, they hadn't had much practice, right? So what would often happen is one crewman would lower too fast, and so suddenly the bow of the ship is dangling down and everybody's about to fall out of the lifeboat. And then the same thing would happen with the stern. So it's a very, very scary, herky-jerky process. Early on, they can't really convince people to get into the lifeboats. People are like, why would I want to get off this nice warm ship and go out there in the freezing cold ocean? The ship seems a lot safer. But part of it also is because the lifeboats are not being loaded in a very kind of orderly fashion.
There was no emergency planning and training. There was no practice or training on the ship of passengers going to the lifeboats. Passengers were not assigned to specific lifeboats. So there was pretty much chaos.
The lack of rehearsal leads to some significant differences of opinion. Not only is there no direct line of communication between Captain Smith and his passengers, his orders aren't even clearly understood by his own crew. Titanic's engines are still venting exhaust, and the deafening rush of air means it's hard for anyone to hear each other on the boat deck. Smith has assigned his two most senior subordinates to supervise the lowering of the lifeboats. First Officer Murdoch is responsible for the odd-numbered boats on the starboard side, Lightoller for the even-numbered boats on the port side, and the two men have very different ideas about the task at hand.
The orders are very confused, right? I mean, the most famous order, you know, that the captain gives is women and children first. Well, what does that mean? You know, it's not entirely clear. So Lightoller, who's loading passengers on one side of the ship, interprets that as women and children only. So he will not allow any men on the lifeboats.
On the starboard side of the Titanic, Murdoch allowed men to go in with women and children in order to encourage the boats to be lowered more quickly. Lightoller really took the order as women and children only, rather than women and children first. And so he didn't allow, for example, 14, 15, 16-year-old boys to travel with their mothers.
Was it women and children first or women and children only on those lifeboats? And the unfortunate thing is that the instructions were so unclear and, you know, the captain was being so... He just didn't take control of the situation. The captain did not step in and say, okay, here's what we need to do. He left it to his senior officers to get on with loading those lifeboats. So very unclear about how these lifeboats should have been loaded, and just such bad leadership by Captain Smith.
Captain Smith's conduct in the 2.5 hours Titanic takes to sink will be debated for more than a century. Is he a negligent commander who fails to save as many lives as possible? Or an experienced officer simply following the protocols he's been given?
You know, Captain Smith knows there's not enough seats for everybody on the lifeboats. He knows that every seat on those lifeboats is precious. They can't afford to launch them half full, right? He knows that that's literally going to lead to people dying. And I think for me, the mystery of Captain Smith is why he's not there sort of behaving more, you know, in a kind of leadership and more forceful capacity. Nobody really sees him like after the collision. And I don't want to cast aspersions because I don't know what he's doing. We don't know what he's doing. He might have been doing something helpful that we just aren't aware of. And, you know, in addition to that, you know, none of us know how we would behave, right, in that particular circumstance. And he must have been dealing with an enormous weight of, you know, just that he was in charge of the ship and what had happened. But, you know, the whole story does cry out for somebody, right, to have taken a sort of leadership role. And several hundred people, potentially more, could have survived if those lifeboats had actually been loaded properly.
The leaders did a bad job preparing the passengers once they hit the iceberg. It's estimated that it took 25 minutes before Smith decided the ship should be abandoned. So they wasted 25 minutes they could have used to get passengers up and ready to go into the lifeboats or even lower some.
He's delegating authority to people who are responsible. I assume that was the normal course of things. I think you can exaggerate Smith's failing. It seems to me that the nitty-gritty of doing things is left up to the subordinates.
The important thing to remember about Titanic's crew, and particularly her captain, Captain Smith, is that they were Royal Naval Reserves. So Smith was a high-ranking captain within the Royal Navy when he was called up. So he would train with the Navy, and he was used to that kind of order and that kind of drill.
It's easy to talk about what they did wrong on the Titanic. There's a lot they did right.
When the chips are really down and things are really serious, you behave extremely properly and you just want to do things as safely and efficiently as you possibly can. And I think that's what was going through the minds of the officers and senior personnel on Titanic throughout the tragedy.
One man who is doing little to help alleviate the chaos, despite his best efforts, is White Star Chairman Bruce Ismay. He is certainly no naval officer. Throughout Titanic's voyage, Ismay has occupied an ambiguous position on board, somewhere between an ordinary passenger and a member of Captain Smith's command crew. Now, still dressed in his pajamas and slippers, with a suit and coat hastily thrown over the top, Ismay attempts to get involved with lowering the lifeboats. "Lower away," he shouts at Fifth Officer Harold Lowe, who's working the crank mechanism for lifeboat number 5. But Lowe doesn't welcome Ismay's input, and in the dark, he doesn't even recognize his boss. As far as he's concerned, Ismay is just an interfering passenger, one who needs to get back in his box. "If you get the hell out of my way, I'll be able to do something," Lowe snaps back angrily. He then calls Ismay a word so rude that no account of the disaster dares to reproduce it. Ismay skulks away, suitably chastened. He tries to help with lifeboat number 3 instead. Eventually, number 5 is lowered, with just over half the seats taken.
If the lifeboats had been loaded more efficiently, hundreds more people could have been saved, right? Those lifeboats go off, some of them go off less than a third full.
Make your next move with American Express Business Platinum. Enjoy complimentary access to the American Express Global Lounge Collection. And with a welcome offer of 150,000 points after you spend $20,000 on purchases on the card within your first 3 months of membership, your business can soar to new heights. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/business-platinum. Amex Business Platinum. Built for business by American Express.
On WhatsApp, no one can see or hear your personal messages. Whether it's a voice call, message, or sending a password. To WhatsApp, it's all just this. So whether you're sharing the streaming password in the family chat or trading those late-night voice messages that could basically become a podcast, your personal messages stay between you, your friends, and your family. No one else. Not even us. WhatsApp. Message privately with everyone.
Eczema isn't always obvious, but it's real. And so is the relief from Ebglyss. After an initial dosing phase, about 4 in 10 people taking Ebglyss achieved itch relief and clear or almost clear skin at 16 weeks. And most of those people maintain skin that's still more clear at 1 year with monthly dosing.
Ebglyss, lebrikizumab, LBKZ, a 250 milligram per 2 milliliter injection, is a prescription medicine used to treat adults and children 12 years of age and older who weigh at least 88 pounds or 40 kilograms with moderate to severe eczema, also called atopic dermatitis, that is not well controlled with prescription therapies used on the skin or topicals, or who cannot use topical therapies. Ebglyss can be used with or without topical corticosteroids. Don't use if you're allergic to Ebglyss. Allergic reactions can occur that can be severe. Eye problems can occur. Tell your doctor if you have new or worsening eye problems. You should not receive a live vaccine when treated with Ebglyss. Before starting Ebglyss, tell your doctor if you have a parasitic infection.
Searching for real relief? Ask your doctor about Ebglyss and visit ebglyss.lilly.com or call 1-800-LILLY-RX or 1-800-545-5979.
A little before 1 a.m., Quartermaster George Rowe is at his post on Titanic's afterbridge, right at the stern of the ship. 200 meters from the command center, the first he knows of the evacuation is when he spots a small white object in the water. Confused, Roe telephones the bridge. "Do you know that a lifeboat has been lowered?" he asks Fourth Officer Boxall.
Literally, some of the officers are off in various parts of the ship and they start to see lifeboats floating around in the water. One of them calls and says, "Hey, you know, are you aware there's a boat, you know, with some people on it floating around in the water?" He doesn't even know that the ship is sinking, and they've sort of forgotten about him wherever he was stationed. And they're like, "Oh, you know, you need to get in here and, you know, grab some distress rockets and come and help us." Another member of the crew kind of looks out and sees one of the lifeboats in the water. And he says, "You know, if they're going to launch the boats, why don't they actually put some people in them?"
In the next episode, the chaos continues as more lifeboats leave Titanic half empty. Fights break out on deck over the rapidly dwindling number of spaces, and a senior officer pulls a gun on a teenage passenger. That's next time. You can listen to the next two episodes of Titanic Ship of Dreams right now, without waiting, by subscribing to Noiser Plus. Just hit the link in the episode description to find out more.
"Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba."
This episode is brought to you by Indeed. When your computer breaks, you don't wait for it to magically start working again. You fix the problem. So why wait to hire the people your company desperately needs? Use Indeed sponsored jobs to hire top talent fast. And even better, you only pay for results. There's no need to wait. Speed up your hiring with a $75 sponsored job credit at Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.